Hi again, this is Bob Patterson, publisher of Street Photography Magazine, and welcome to our featured photographer interview for February 2019. This month, our featured photographer is Glenn Cameron. He's a photojournalist, or maybe a former photojournalist. I'm sure he'll tell us about that. He's from Australia, and he's currently living in Surfer's Paradise. I've never been there, but it sure sounds cool. I know it's up around Brisbane somewhere. So anyway, and also with us today is Ashley Hunsberger. She's back from a long trip to Vietnam. Now she's back in the U.S. and ready to go. So how you doing, Ashley?
Doing good. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, and Glenn, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. It's nice to hear from you and hear what your voice sounds like after all this time, although I've heard you in previous interviews. So it seems a long way to get. Yeah, thank you.
That's true. We've traded a lot of emails over the last few months.
A lot of photographs gone down. Yeah,
I know. We booked these things pretty far in advance, so apologize for making you wait, but it's going to be worth it.
Everything's fine. Thank you very much.
So anyway, so Glenn, he's from Australia, as you can tell. He's been all over the world, like almost every other Aussie I've met. You guys never stay home. And he's lived here in the U.S., and God, he's been to all these cool places, worked as a photojournalist, newspaper, and magazine photographer, damn fine street photographer. So that's why he's here. He's going to share his wisdom with us and tell us some stories. And so to get started, Glenn, I'm going to start off the way we always do and just ask you, how the heck did you get into photography in the first place?
Back in the old days. Well, I worked on a newspaper as a printer and as a 15-year-old, and I happened to notice all these guys rushing back and forwards in through the office with their camera bags, and that was the start of it. By which time, I'd already taken my first photograph at 8. I took a photograph of a hotel in outback Queensland. My mother gave me a box brownie, and I always had that around me. And when I worked on this newspaper and saw these guys, the excitement of it, I thought, well, as soon as I finish my apprenticeship, I'm out of here and I'm going to do that. The only thing is I didn't finish my apprenticeship. I was in a hurry to get there. And so, from there, I just self-taught, actually, and just kept taking photographs. I actually worked for quite a while for a newspaper for nothing, just to get my feet under the table.
So what did you photograph with in those days?
They were very early model Nikons, very clumsy. We had Yashica mat for the larger format. And, apart from the box brownie, it was all pretty simple cameras in those days, nothing expensive.
My son bought a Graflex 4x5.
Oh, my God. He made famous by Arthur Fellig, the guy called Ouija. He was a famous street photographer. I've had in the past probably 30-odd Nikons. I was a Nikon person. I've had a few Canons, 4 or 5 plate cameras, Hasselblads. And believe me, I think the cost of cameras is the only thing that's standing in the way of between me and success.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, the cost, at one time I weighed it up. I was walking around with, when I'd go on to a studio job, I've got portable studio lights, Hasselblad. And, I'm probably looking at the thin edge of $20,000. So when you're earning your money and then spending it all on photographic equipment, it's a bit of a come between you. It wasn't when I used to photograph the football when I was a sports photographer with a little Nikon mat and a 135 2.8 lens. It means I had to run faster than the footballers. One up in front of them so I could score the try or the whatever was happening. Yeah. I see today the guys are walking around with holding cameras one-handed and just what they call spray and pray. The motor drives is churning out hundreds of pics while they're just aiming it willy-nilly at whatever's happening.
Would you say that you feel like photography required more skill in years past?
Oh, of course it did. These kids of today know nothing. Yeah, I believe so, because you have you had to have your exposures right and your focus right. It was all manual, you know. Mm-hmm. There was none of this auto. You see some of the focusing on these cameras today. You've got from spot focusing to overall focusing, where it takes a general thing of the whole area. You have the same with your exposures. You can set everything on automatic and probably do a better job. They're so proficient, these modern cameras.
Yeah, it's true. So many people don't even really take the time to learn to shoot manually anymore.
Well, yeah, I think that's their problem. You know, I think for them, they're missing out a bit here. But I have a camera that's about the size of a deck of cards. And mostly I set it on automatic and I just walk around. I drag it out of my pocket and I ping someone in the street. And, so you can't blame us for changing over as well.
Nothing wrong with making things easier.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, here this camera fits in my pocket. Otherwise, I wouldn't take a camera with me. You know, yesterday, I was in the streets. A family argument broke out. I whipped a camera out, photographed a guy holding his wife and the kids screaming and all this. The only reason I wouldn't put it anywhere on Facebook is it involves a young, sorry, a 12-year-old, you know, looking 13-year-old boy in it. And I'm thinking he wouldn't like to see his face splashed all over Facebook. Have to be a bit careful of what you put out there when you've seen something happen, automatic cameras or not. I think I'd have missed it if I'd have had to start setting up exposures and focus and apertures. So sweet.
Do you spend a lot of years as a journalist, photojournalist, newspaper, magazine? I mean, what's some of the most interesting things that happened to you?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things happening. I guess during the early 80s, I worked for the News of the World, and you know what reputation they have, standing outside someone's house for days on end waiting for a photograph. Not that that's exciting, but sometimes it could be very exciting when they came out or a bodyguard came out and wanted to have a chat with you. I've been to a celebrity wedding where a guy grabbed me, this gorilla. I was the only photographer there because I got the inside information, and he grabbed me, or he went to, and I grabbed his arm to hold him back. The arm fell out, came out of his brand-new suit. I guess it was only just tacked up a little bit to get him to a wedding, and here's this gorilla. He's standing there, and I've got the sleeve of his jacket. You know. I just said to him, I said, come on, it's a little girl's, you know, this starlet. I said, it's her wedding, and I'm the only one here. Back off, man, and let's just do one photograph, and I'm gone, which I did do, yeah. Some of them haven't been that pleasant when I get chased by someone or something like that. I don't know what it was. I sometimes would rock up onto a crime scene and I'd have all the police telling me the inside information. Mind you, I used to wear a collar and tie, unlike some of the photographers. But they'd give me all the inside information and off I'd go with that information and get a photograph.
Did you write as well when you were working as a photojournalist?
No. When I said photojournalist, it was mostly extended captions into a bit of a yarn. It certainly wasn't feature writing or in-depth. It was mostly photography for me. Sometimes you'd have to come back and really tell the story to someone else or write what you saw, and I'm sure the subs had a field day with that, knocking into shape.
Wow. So was photojournalism everything you expected it to be?
It was very exciting in those days, actually. It was going places. I remember my pick editor coming to me quite often as I was going home, and he'd say, I don't suppose you'd be interested in doing a back-to-back shift, would you? And I'd say, well, of course I would, you know. Well, I was going to fly somewhere. They were going to put me in a helicopter and send me to a crash scene, or up here in Queensland, of course, it's such a vast state. It was nothing to be charging down to the TV helicopters to go out with them to photograph maybe a road smash or a killing or something in far, far western Queensland. It was just expected. Or maybe if you had to go to the rodeos and things like that. What was out of town, you just either get in a helicopter or a light plane and out you go. And talking of light planes, I had an occasion where I was sitting out on the wing strut photographing a guy doing stunts in another small aircraft, And when I'd finished, I went to pull myself back in by the seat belt, and it wasn't done up.
Oh, my God.
which made me stop and think for a little while.
Maybe you should have been wearing a parachute, too.
I believe so, but this is the whole excitement of it. You see, you do. I don't want to keep going on about my experiences too much, but a chap and I, a journalist and I, went to photograph a crop dusting aircraft, and he was the journalist, and so we did this pre-arranged thing with the pilot. He was going to come screaming down the airstrip at me and zoom up at the last minute, and the guy that I was with was going to shout, "Get down," when he was, because with a telephoto lens, you lose perspective of how close these things are. And neither of us had factored in that the roar of the engine, I couldn't hear him singing out, "Get out, get down." I had the pic, you know, through the lens, I just thought, oh my gosh, this plane's very large. So I dropped.
Oh,
yeah. It was. But we do
live to tell the tale.
Yeah, but in those days, this is why it used to be so exciting to do this sort of thing. I'm not saying I would go out purposely to do that, but most certainly you would do it as part of the job to get the best picture. And you really didn't think that far apart, you know, to safety. And so, yeah. Oh, I could sit here all day and fill you up with all this nonsense.
So is street photography now equally exciting?
It can be. I say with a mischievous grin on my face. Like yesterday or the day before when I did those people having this punch up in the street, you have to be careful who's around and who's with them or for them or against them. Because they see you taking a photograph, if it's a friend of theirs, you know, they don't like that. You become the target. I was quite aware of who was around, so I can hold the camera down at waist level and pretend I'm not doing much else than looking. It's a bit of a chase for me at times. If I see something, I'll go after it. And part of my thing is I can get up to about 12 inches off someone and photograph them. And they don't have a clue I've done it. I see in some of the photographs I've come back and found these people eyeballing me.
I've seen that in some of your photos.
Yeah, I'm thinking to myself, not too clever, Glenn. You know,
I know.
But I have a million and one excuses. You know, I'm old. Don't hit me. I generally explain. Look, if I have any problems, I think I can talk my way out of it. I'm most certainly not going to be able to run from anyone, but I have an occasion I've photographed people in the street. I might go uptown. Where I live is a very, very touristy area, and over night time it's buzzing, you know, with tourists and whatever. And I was photographing something, I don't know, with movement because it was night time, and this girl ran past me. And I thought, fair enough, a jogger at night, you know. And I don't even remember if I did, but then she turned around, came screaming back at me, and she's going to shove the camera down my throat and whatever. And the best way I could get rid of her screeching, I was going to say, well, let's call the cops. You know, you're in a public street. I didn't photograph you. Let's call the police. And I said, I'll give you a second phone call. Be your lawyer because you've accused me of something, and suddenly she ran off. So there's always a way of doing it. And look, I shouldn't be giving my secrets away, but...
Oh, no, that's why you're on here.
Yeah.
If you're in a dodgy situation, carry the camera manual with you. When you're looking down at the viewfinder, be looking at the instruction sheet. So if anyone comes over, you say, well, hang on, man, I've just got this camera. I'm just...
Look, that's a good trick.
Oh, I like that. And the camera manual's worthless anyway. You can't figure out what they say.
Well, now we know it's not worthless.
Yeah. I have, I can't work it out. I have to go back through. And I think there's a lot of uselessness on a camera today. I use spot color a little bit, but if I'm bored. There's just too many gizmos and gadgets in there, like toy color and things like that. But
yeah, I agree with you.
They'd be better off just making... I would love to have an old Nikon FM2 operation in a modern camera, manual or automatic, and just leave it at that.
Well, Leica makes some like that, if you can afford it.
I was just about to say, Bob.
It's more expensive to go back to the basics.
Bob and Ashley may be able to afford the has been certainly not me. Will they be doorstops like the Hasselblads of yesteryear? You know, will they be something that people won't be able to get rid of? I don't know.
Yeah, I knew a professional photographer in Cleveland had a Hasselblad. He wound up putting it out on the curb. He couldn't sell it.
Yeah. Well, my friend has one, and he uses it to hold the door open. You know, that's back then was $6,000 worth. Now, will this?
Oh, yeah.
This Leica you're going to spend about $3,000 on today, will that be another doorstop in 10 years' time? It's happening. Sony. I'm just getting off the point here, but Sony have got a list as long as your arm of new models. Why can't they just make one decent camera and stop?
Well, that's what they do.
Yeah, they do make a decent camera, there's no doubt. But what is on one is not on the other. So one is a little bit... wanting just to be standardized, I guess.
Yeah, Sony anytime they come up with a new feature, they come out with a new camera. Where I use Fuji, and Fuji gives everybody free firmware upgrades.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But Sony will just come out with a new model because they've got a new software feature.
Well, the good thing about this little Sony, I call it my pocket rocket because it goes everywhere, and it doesn't have a shutter sound. That's why I can be 12 inches away, and especially when I was in Paris when I'm standing right next to a soldier. The only thing is, here again, you have to be a little bit cautious. I have photographs up close of soldiers, but are you putting them at risk by publishing their photographs?
I saw those pictures. I think you're putting yourself at risk because they look like some pretty tough guys.
But they're all baby faced. You know, I look at the hands on them and I think, God, they're the hands of a baby. You know, your face, you're not even shaving yet. Yeah, I wouldn't like to say that to them.
Speaking of your small camera, I saw in one of our emails that you said, you know, you gave up photography for a long time until this little camera came along. What was that all about?
Well, I was working 7 days a week and 15 hours every day. And I missed my family, my boy growing up. You know, I saw him walking to the beach with his mum one day, and the next minute when he was 12, and then the next minute he's nearly 18. And I'm thinking, goodness. So I decided to jump out. I decided to just jump from photography. And besides, the 80s were over then or ending, and there was less money around. That's when I switched to Canon, and I had a Canon with two lenses and two zoom lenses, and I was often asked, well, you're not taking a camera today, and I said, I can't be bothered. So when these ones, I often used to say to a friend of mine, I'll come back to photography when they have this, that, and the other. Well, sure enough, it almost happened, so... This little thing goes from a wide angle, I think it's 24, up until about 600 mil zoom. So it's got panorama on it. You know, it's everything, and it fits in my pocket. That's the best thing I can say about it. And it doesn't make a noise. It's totally concealable.
Yeah, which model is that?
Do I get paid for a plug for Sony? Sony DSC-HX90 or BX90. It has a viewfinder also, you know, which is good because, you know, on the bright and sunny days, you can't see the back of the screen. This has a little pop-up viewfinder. So that's worth its weight in gold. And it has a 10 frames a second motor drive. You know, for something the size of a deck of cards, how could you not want that? Please, Sony, give me a free camera, Sony.
So what are you doing now? Are you just doing street photography for your own personal enjoyment?
Yeah. Now, my partner is a well-known travel writer, and she and I go to a lot of places, and we do it like this, and sometimes I supplement. She's an excellent photographer. We have a little joke here where if she shows me something on the back of the camera or on the computer later, I'll just say, oh, sorry, I can't see that. My eyes are going, which really I'm saying, bugger, you know, you've really got a great pick there. But, yeah, she can taking out gun me certain days, and that's good. You know, it's a bit of a competition, but sometimes, you know, some of the travel stories, I'll supplement a photograph here or there. Not many, because she's got it all sewn up. And but I just enjoy taking. I like to get back and see what I have. Then I stick it on Facebook. Then I get 2 likes. Then I get unhappy. But I won't put them on Instagram because I think that is so lazy. I think people that, what are they doing it for? They like their photographs. They want people to see them, but they just jam it on Instagram, and that's the end of it. People can steal them from there, so.
You made a couple of comments about Instagram. I mean, what makes it any more lazy than posting on Facebook or Flickr or anyplace else?
Well, I don't know that much about Flickr, and I don't know that much about Flickr nor Instagram as much, but it just seems if you can dump 1,000-odd photographs on somewhere and that's the end of it, do people comment on that many photographs? I just think it's a lazy way of showing your photographs. I think you'd be better off showing 1 or 2 at a time, or having a showcase somewhere, having an exhibition. See, this, what we used to do is have an exhibition where you would make some picture framer very rich. But those days are gone now. Hardly anyone does have a exhibition. So I guess it's easier just to show. And, of course, a lot of it comes back to iPhone. You know, someone with a million photographs just sticks them on Instagram, and I think, what's that about?
Well, I agree with you. I think whether you are having a gallery show or you're posting online, my recommendation is to say, for example, you have a website, you treat it like a gallery. You're only going to put 15 photos on there or 20 photos, and don't dump your card in the thing. Because, I mean, less is more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem with social media today. And who's to say if it's a problem or if it's the good point of social media, but it's available to everyone, and you're not required to curate your work if it is even work what you're shooting.
But is there any connection? Is there, when you throw up a 50 odd photographs at a time, is there any cohesion between the what you're trying to get out there, the message, or you know, this is why I've looked around. I saw Street Photography magazine, and I thought, well, yeah, you know, it looks good, and you can put a selection together. But just to dump so many photographs, I think that's a waste of. Waste of anything. And, you know, it's, even if you put 2 or 3 on Facebook, you'll get a like, and then you look at the others, and there's no likes on there. Obviously, people just like the first one, and then they move on. They don't really like it. They're not even looking.
Too much to look at.
I think there is, Bob, and I think with iPhones, you see, I was in an event recently, and you couldn't see the group, the band, because everyone's got a phone. You know, there must have been 20 people with iPhones there. I'm thinking, this is not my, because I still do band photography, but they're down market bands. Some of them are people in pubs and clubs and bars and taverns, but mostly for them, you know, for the groups. And that's fraught with problems too, especially lighting and people with iPhones.
Yeah, I compare the likes to like a slot machine. You know, you keep putting money into a slot machine. Every now and then you get something back. You know, and then that keeps you going.
Well, it's funny because you say that, because sometimes you put up a photograph and you're really happy with it. It's about 4 likes, and my partner, she'll put one up which is a food photo, and she'll get about 20 or 30. But geez, you know, what am I going to do here? You know, I've busted myself to get out and get a photograph of someone on the street. I think it comes back to how many friends you have on Facebook. And how honest they are, yeah.
I did. Well, matter of fact, I challenged myself to publish 1 photo a day for a year.
Oh, really?
365 project, which is hard. And so I've been trying to take some nice photos and put them up. Of course, we're only a few days into the year, and I had one that I took at I lived near Thomas Jefferson's home, Monticello. So I took one in a gift shop, and I had all these jars of seasoning, and it was, I guess we can use this on the podcast. It's all some kind of shit. It's like one of them's good shit, one of them is hot shit, one of them's bullshit, chicken shit. You know, and I took a picture. We have some of the seasoning in our house. It's pretty good. I took a picture of it, and I thought, I've got to post something today. I put that up. I must have like 100 likes of that photo. It's just a quick snap from my iPhone.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's the content there that's won them over. There's the funny, the humorous side.
But it makes me wonder if the issue isn't necessarily about the quality of photography, but rather the quality of humanity.
Yeah, well, you're right there. That's another contention with me is I see some of these photographs of people, street photography, and they're showing someone who's homeless, down or out.
Yeah.
And it's like a studio shot. It's sharp, it's contrasty, it's in focus from here to the end of the earth, and it looks like a studio shot. Now, I think it's lost its content. I think it has to be, well, I'm making excuses for my poor quality, but it has to have a certain roughness, rawness to it, you know, the certain scenes. I wouldn't get half the photographs I do if I worried about is everything in focus or is there no move? Because I'm down 20th of a second hand holding and
oh, wow,
just to get a shot. And by the way, I've chased after people and got into step. Oh, I don't like that word, God. And I've fallen in behind them in step to get the same rhythm so I can hold the camera and snap them. So it's not the sharpest photograph in the world, but at least I have a photograph. And I think that's the differentiation because these amateurs just want anything that's sharp and you know, they go to a group, a band, and it's all lights and it looks good. But what do they do with it? There's no worth because they haven't had to chase after it. They haven't had to work on it. You know, they haven't run around the front of their quarry and stand there and pretend they're not going to do it. Yeah, I think there's a bit of love in the chase of it. I'm pretty evil, I think.
So people who are new to this, and what would you recommend they do differently
get
from what you're seeing today?
Get a job. Well, I still have a problem. People that come on and say, hey, I'm a photographer. And I say, yeah, what do you really do? And they say, well, I'm a plumber during the day. I said, well, I'm coming down to work on your site tomorrow because I could do it with a few dollars. Or I'm an accountant. I don't deny anyone the opportunity to take photographs, but I do think that you have to pay your dues a bit. They're not really photographers. They're walking around with an iPhone. And I would like to challenge someone and say, here's an assignment. And see what they come back with. That'd be an interesting experiment. And look, I did the same thing when I was starting out, when I was very young, working for people for a while without fees because I wanted to be a photographer. But they don't want to be a photographer either. A lot of them will do it on the weekend or something like that. And their images are never seen again. It's a different world today. Sorry, Ashley.
No, it's true what you say, that sometimes, you know, we take images and maybe they'll never be seen. Do you think there's value in that, even if no one sees the images?
No, not really. You look at the number of baby photographs out there today. The parents are, and I love seeing the grandkids. But I'm scared that they won't have those photographs in 20, 30 years' time. If the computer goes down, there goes their photographs. If they lose their phone, there goes their photographs. You know, it's just a... It's all a quick fix for the moment, but I don't think anyone's worrying about quality or... I just found out the other day that some of the external hard drives have a known shelf life, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, when you look at how the media itself has changed. We used to have tape backup for the computers. That's gone. Floppy disks, those are gone. save things onto CD-ROM or a DVR. Well, those discs deteriorate over time. Yeah. I think your really good photographs, I think your best protection is to print them.
That's right. Yeah, or keep the negatives in a good climate. It's a changing world, but I don't think it's changed that much for the better in regards to longevity. I think it will change, like that's the saying about the cameras. It'll change at someone's whim. They don't care where you've been with your last camera for the last 10 years. They will just change it or film. You see, I have negatives that are 50 years old, stored correctly. They're still there. As you say, do a print.
Yeah, a good archival print will last hundreds of years.
Or get it in Street Photography magazine, and then it's always there.
Always. It's everywhere.
Yeah. There's just, I don't know, I just don't think people, they're just snapping stuff, and it's some of it is excellent. I knew a physician once, and he took this photograph, and I said, what are you going to do with it? He said, oh, nothing. And I thought, wow, what a waste that is. Here's a great photograph. He's not even going to try and get it published. So what's it all about?
Well, I tell you, we look at a lot of photographs from people all around the world. There are a lot of really amazing photographers.
Yes.
We're just doing it, you know, on weekends or at nights or whatever. They're not published anywhere, but they're really, really good.
Well, that's a shame, isn't it? That's a crying shame because, you know, your magazine's not big enough to carry everyone's weight. You know, it's you're doing your best, and it's just so much this weight of content there, and it doesn't go anywhere. And you think, why bother? I guess they enjoy it for the few moments. I guess having come from the commercial side of it, I like to see something happen after your effort. It's a double-edged sword. I don't deny anyone the right that they should go out and take photographs, but at the same time, don't get in other people's way. That's another thing. Show respect to some of the people, too.
Glenn, when were you in France? Was that recently?
That last year, yes. This time last year I was there. My partner and I went to Morocco, France, Belgium, Poland.
That must have been a wonderful trip.
Amazing, yes. And I was glad I didn't have to buy film.
I really enjoyed a lot of your images from France and Morocco.
Yeah, that was pretty easy going that. There's so much out there. It's just a matter of keeping your eyes out. Keeping your eyes open and looking out for things that are happening around you. Then we come to that thing about what is street photography, you know? Mm-hmm. Is photographing anything? I tend to think I'm a people photographer, but it just happens to be mostly in the streets. Because I do a lot of things on the beach, living on the beach side. I do lots of things on the beach as well. But if you love this world, which I do, and there's so much happening out there and so much to see in so little time. It's very difficult. It's more difficult now, I think, because what I refer to as visual pollution is signage, cars, and people. Back in the old days, people modeled themselves on Bresson and Codelco and all that lot. You can't do that any longer because it's just too much around you. Advertising signs, I hate them. I suppose you could do an essay on signage, but what would you do after that? The pure, simple form of photography is gone. The thing that we all were drawn to photography by, the simplicity and the openness is finished, and it's just become a mess of people and cars, etc. People won't crop their photographs. I will, because if I've got some person standing to the right of a subject or left or bottom or top or anywhere, I'll crop them out. I don't care what shape the photograph is. This photograph should stand on its own. A photograph is like a mirror. You look into it. You don't look at it. You look in and see what you come back. You know, sometimes Not always, but sometimes there's that little nuance in the corner or something staring you. You think, oh, I didn't see that before.
Yeah, some of my favorite images, now that you said that, especially from your France trip, they're very simple. I really liked your image of the filmmaker.
Oh, yes. Well, there again, you see, this is the thing with when you go to a city and you walk around. Don't get into a cab, although I've been in cabs. But yeah, I just stumbled. I was going to the steps at Sacré-Cœur because there's an article on Facebook, on the internet, the 10 famous photographers in Paris. And they've all had an attempt at the stairs at Sacré-Cœur. I can't think of the name of them. And that's where I was heading to go up to Sacré-Cœur, the beautiful cathedral at the top. And this chap happened to be standing at the bottom, and I just was so excited. I don't like using, I won't use a flash, and I don't like posing people. I really don't. If I can't do it without naturally, I won't do it. And then after I took that photograph, because I was thinking, and I just asked him, could I take his photograph? And he ran over to this, well, he didn't run, but he walked quickly over to the bottom of the stairs and stood there. I thought, that's so Neanderthal, that. I thanked him very much. But then he took my camera and he said, I'll take a photograph of you now.
That's great.
But I have had a friend who Parisian, and unfortunately he's passed away since, but I was in touch with him, and he identified the chap as a well-known filmmaker in Paris. Hmm. But just that chance meeting of walking around the corner, it's like this thing in the streets the other day. You have to be there, and then just when you hear a ruckus, aim at it, you know. But this guy wasn't making a ruckus. He was just doing. And on those steps that day, I found personal trainers halfway up. The woman posed for me, which I didn't ask her to do. And she threatened me. And I thought, oh, my God, all my birthdays have come at once. This young lady with boxing gloves on, and I thought, she's going to punch me out. But she came up rather quickly to me, stopped, and then came onto me again and hugged me. And I thought,
I think you'd rather be punched with gloves than without.
I thought the hug was better.
Speaking of your France photos, I was really drawn to the one, the busker. Yeah, I love the way you frame that. And yeah, what can you tell us about this guy?
The busker, which was he?
Oh, it's a guy playing an accordion, a dark background, like a wall with a window.
But see, once again, that had to be cropped because of the people around. And you have to wait to moments. Yeah, the dreamy-looking guy on the right-hand side of the frame.
Yeah, far right.
Yeah, so he was just there. And once again, if you keep your eyes open, your opportunity will be there to do this.
I like that these, I feel like these images are really timeless. It's hard you look at them and it's hard to say when you took these. But I think maybe that speaks to what you were talking about earlier, how photography has changed and making photographs like they were in the past is nearly impossible now.
It is, yes. So much in the way, street signs, you know, and things like that. Modern buildings. You go to a place and there's this modern building in amongst all this older architecture, and you think, why have they allowed that? But anyway, I shouldn't question everything, just do it. I was going to say Paris is a timeless city, though. It's amazing. I've seen the Eiffel Tower so many times, I'm just a bit over it, you know. There's thankfully, it doesn't have a big banner saying "Eat at McDonald's" on it.
Yet,
not yet. Yeah.
An amusing aside was when we were in Morocco. Our guide said to my partner, "He said we are now going past the American Embassy in a moment." And we were driving along, and the next minute, there's McDonald's. And he said, "There, American Embassy." I said, "Oops, yeah, good old. Thank you." Sense of humor helps.
Yeah, it sure does. I notice most of these photos are in black and white. Did you convert them, or did you just shoot them shoot them in black and white from the beginning?
I mostly do them in color because I'm doing a compilation of 700 odd photographs at the moment,
sure,
with all involved people, which you're going to find a publisher for me. There are some in color because I think it'd be folly to miss out on something, mm-hmm, that's not going to convert to black and white. It's easier to have it in color.
Yeah.
And then convert it. You can't take it in black and white and then convert it to color. There are just a certain few things, not many, and I suppose really I don't care that much that I could really ditch the color ones, but I think they say something as well. They have a place, unless I go to somewhere where there's just, like, I was going to say Ireland. I shouldn't say this. I took a photograph of a guy in Ireland some time ago. I've never seen such a bland, bleak, black and white. I could have had the best color film in the world that would have come out black and white. With color, it picks up the glaring. It detracts from some of the subject matter, you know, after you go.
No, you were saying a while ago, sometimes you're shooting at 1/20th of a second. I mean, why is that? Just because of the light, or you like shooting at a slower speed?
Oh, no, I don't like it. I'd rather have something safer, you know, nearly a second sometimes, you know, that I tend to lean on things, not because I've been drinking either, but I lean on things for, you know, I'll use a garbage bin in front of me or anything, a light post, to lean on something which is good. And then the subject moves and then it's blurry. So I'm back to where I started. No, but I generally rate things at 400 ASA or ISO, mm-hmm, whatever they call it now. And the camera is limited by the aperture. It's not the 2.8 or anything decent. It's about 4, I think.
Really?
So that's why I have to walk in sync with someone so that I can get a decent photograph without showing too much movement. I wouldn't use flash. Never.
No.
Wouldn't ever do it. There's an old joke about that. The guy said, I only use available light. He said, whether it be moonlight, sunlight, or direct flash, whatever's available.
Whatever.
Your available light joke. I just prefer to walk around and with this little Sony and have it on the ready and see what happens. You know, not everything is a success. Sometimes I've missed out because it is way out of. Some people say to me, "Oh, that's out of focus." I'm saying, "Well, yes, it looks like it, but it was really either the subject or myself is moving." It's the movement that's more than a problem. It could be out of focus, but I don't think anyone should take it all too seriously. But at the same time, if you get something that's nice to look at, then you've won.
Before we move on, one of them I really like, you took in France, called Benchmen.
Oh, yeah,
I like
bench
that one too.
Looking to see, it's beautiful, timeless.
Yes, well, that's.
I like the grain. I mean, I don't know if you added grain or that was just because.
I don't add anything. I don't do much with Photoshop.
Yeah, good.
I don't even have Photoshop. I have Lightroom, which is a basic version. That was taken on film a little while ago. That was 16.
Oh, okay.
ASA. Now, I did have a book out many years ago called Positive Images. It was a bit of a flop, but I sold all the copies. There weren't that many of it. The quality was bad and whatever. That photograph in particular, I was down in Nice, near Monte Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at night time. We're getting on. The sun was going down. It was staring me right in the face. And I went through a time when I was just traveling and shot everything on black and white, 1600 ASA, basically because I was too lazy to change the film speeds up and down or change the film. Ilford put out a great film some years later. I think it was XP1. You could shoot it at 50 ASA or 1600 ASA with the same results. So that was good. I used to do the sports in the afternoon, starting it off on 400 ASA, and by halftime I'd be on 1600 ASA. But getting back to the two men on the seat, there again, if it's, it depends on how you look at a photograph, or, as I said, look into a photograph to get something back. Underneath the chap on the left is a puddle. Now, he has relieved himself. There's two homeless gentlemen. And he has moved along, shuffled along, so he's away from sitting in the wet spot. And right behind me is one of the richest casinos in the world. And in front of me was the two gentlemen and eternity to the sea. And I just thought, this is a crazy world. That print, to get that print took me probably 6 hours because it was so much flare from the direct light in front of me. And I worked and worked away at it. And I probably used a box of paper back in the office.
I just love the look of that 1600 film.
Oh, yes, yeah. But there again, you see, it's not acceptable. And as you say, did you add it? This is a little bit of this crazy world we live in. One of the things when digital first came out, we were feared. I worked for Rupert Murdoch, like most of us did, and we're fearful that he was going to add things in that he shouldn't. And sure enough, within a year, he did.
He's still doing that.
Still doing it, yeah. But do you know what I mean? I will darken, I will crop, I will lighten things, maybe get rid of a spot or two, but no, I don't Photoshop. If you have to do that, stay at home and do something else, I think.
You know, I'm noticing...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right now, sorry to change the subject a bit, but I just feel like I noticed something right now as we were just talking about these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm right or not, so you can correct me, Glenn, but I feel like as I look at your images, everything that's in black and white speaks to that timeless photography before.
Yeah.
And everything in color speaks to me about the social changes and issues that are going on in today's modern world.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot more signage. I see a lot more people looking a little crazy. I love, for example, the shot you took in the UK called Invade.
Oh, yeah, him.
I really love that one. I feel like there's a message behind it that's more than just what you see.
Well, I saw him coming up the street, you see, and oftentimes because I don't know whether it's an age thing or they see this little tiny camera and they think, oh, here's an amateur or a tourist. They don't bother with me. And I saw this big guy and I thought he's going to walk straight in front of me, and that's pretty good because what had caught my eye was the store mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, how crazy is that? I think it was Selfridges or one of the big London stores. And I saw him coming up, and I thought, he's not going to stop for me. So I had one shot of that, and I was so lucky to get it. He's slightly out of focus or movement, if you notice. He's not quite as sharp.
You know, we published that photo.
Yeah, I know.
I'm still waiting
for the check.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like I looked at this, and it transmitted to me the idea that the world is a little crazy right now, and people are just kind of aloof about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have another photograph taken the same day, actually, and it looks like Peter Andre, the singer, and he's walking along with torn jeans on alongside this rather large, portly gentleman, and the contrast is so big. But I've shown it to people, and they say, well, yeah, it looks like him, but is it? And I'm thinking, I'll never know. Did I photograph Peter Andre in the street? But I've had store detectives follow me around stores, and oh, it's crazy, you know. I get a bit of enjoyment out of getting up close and personal. I've been known to drive back a couple of miles having seen a picture in front
really?
Of me. And I get up the road and I think, no, it's not worth it. You know, the light was good, but it's not worth it. Oh, it was a couple of lovely old couples holding hands. But no, it's not worth it. They'll be gone by now.
Yeah, they'll be fighting by the time you get back.
2 miles have gone by. I've turned around, gone back, and there they are, and I've done it, and... sometimes they're not there, though. That's a waste of effort.
I tell you, one of my favorites, speaking of color, is the one you took in Morocco, the doorman.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
crazy.
That's a good one.
Well, they're again out the side of a tourist bus. You know, it's just some of them, not that one in particular, but others were taken through the glass, and that makes it difficult. you know, when you realize that you've gone all this way and you see a great shot and the driver, excuse me, and the driver won't, well, I won't say he wouldn't pull up, but it's gone by the time you ask him to. But yeah, that was on a horse and carriage tour around the city. And that was, it's just a matter of looking. It's a matter of seeing something, I guess. And is it in the eye? Is it what's in the eye? But is it experience in the past? Or
that's the trick. I mean, just actually seeing it in the first place.
Yeah, I felt like earlier this year, we went on a trip and I took a film camera. And I felt like that helped me to see more, just knowing I had limited shots. But yeah. I think with so much digital now, unlimited ability to capture any photo, it's almost like it robs your ability to see.
Well,
the really good images.
I see so many people aren't seeing the event because they're too busy filming it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they've got their heads buried in their iPhone or a video. And I'm thinking, you know, you're going to, if your film's not much good, then you're really not going to, you've missed your big time in life at seeing a whale jump or something like that. You know, they'd say, oh, I've got it when they get home and they haven't got it. They haven't seen it either. Yeah. I think you have to be a bit, share your moments, you know, grab a photograph, you know, with still photography, grab the moment and then have a look what you're there for, you know, keep your eyes open.
Hey, before we wrap up, I do want to ask you one other thing. So you have a number of shots from Cuba. When were you there?
Oh, that was quite a while ago. It was probably about 8 years ago, yeah. That was shot on film too. I was one of those ones I think I had a, oh no, it was taken on digital, early digital, and somehow the card became corrupt. I think it was either all the rum was spilled over. No, it wasn't the rum. It was, I think I left the camera in the sun and it so many images were damaged. You know, just a crazy thing when I opened up, put the card in the computer, just a lot of it was gone. Those old cards or something. It's up there with Morocco as far as my next stop would be Russia.
That's nice. You're with somebody who travels a lot.
Oh, well, that's her job. She's a travel writer, one of the best travel writers around. Yeah, she's wonderful. She's very organized and, as I say, outguns me. And that doesn't annoy me at all. I think it's good. I just say I can't see it. When I look at her photographs, I don't know it and don't want to see it. But basically, you know, before we wrap up, I there's so much out there still. But I would say to a lot of people, don't try and emulate the old masters. A lot of the old masters were fakes anyhow because they used to set photographs up. The flag at Iwo Jima, for instance, some of Bresson's stuff was set up. I guess they were just taking advantage of the situation.
Sure.
But I have taken photographs which are similar. People say, hey, you're copying so-and-so. I said, not copying anyone. And they'll show me something in a book, and I'll say, well, it's close. You know, they don't have copyright on every image.
Yes. Mark Twain said, be yourself. Everybody else is taken.
I like that very much, yeah. And just get out there and enjoy it. Don't be too serious about it. Not you, the readers.
All right. Well, Glenn, hey, thanks. Appreciate you taking the time. Appreciate your patience. I wonder if you could share where people can learn more about you.
Well, I just suppose if they wanted to go on Facebook, that's the only thing where I do have some photographs up on a regular basis. That's Glenn Cameron, freelance photographer. I'll certainly talk to anyone who comes along and wants to know anything that I can share. You know, I have a million more stories, but we haven't got time for all that. And this has just started as, well, it hasn't started, but it's a continuation of just keeping myself interested. And if other people like some of the photographs, then that makes me happy, yeah.